Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. Thank you, those that are subscribers. I really appreciate all you do to help support us and to keep us moving forward. It's been a great blessing. Those that have purchased the USBs and the Agenda Weekly subscriptions, thank you. We appreciate those orders. Anybody that would still like to get those, you can still order them this week and get them by Christmas. But we would appreciate if you would consider doing that. Those on Rumble, please like, follow, and share. But also, I want to apologize. Rumble is starting to put so many commercials, and those are not us. I just want you to know we're not putting those on there. It's something that they used not to do, and now they're doing just constantly like YouTube always has, and it's a real nuisance. So we're going to maybe not post there anymore and see if we can find another platform that doesn't do that, because it just wastes people's time. That's the whole reason we do Agenda Weekly, is to save you time so you don't have to watch hours of commercials every week to figure out what's going on. But anyway, sorry about that. Today, we're going to talk about one of the most important issues of our time that needs to be completely understood. I know a lot of you get it. And you'll go, oh, I already know about that. But in this presentation by Richard Gage, we're going to cover September 11th and what really happened. This is going to be a two-part series. We're going to do one part now and then one part in January. But this guy, Richard Gage, is an architect. And he has spent the last 20 years proving scientifically that the Twin Towers and Building 7, which we'll talk about today, they didn't come down by planes or fires or anything like that. They were absolutely, beyond any shadow of any doubt, controlled demolitions done by our government. Now, if you know that already, you're like, yeah, so what? If you don't, watch, and it will be proven to you beyond any shadow of a doubt. It's not like, well, there's a good chance that happened. It's 100% fact that our government, with military-grade explosives, premeditatedly, months ahead of time, set those buildings up so they would fall. I know that sounds crazy. It took me years to accept that. But we need to get every single person in America with the facts to accept that. It's a key part in awakening those that are still asleep. A key part of us finally moving forward and realizing what the Bible said was true. Man is desperately wicked. Our founders knew that. That's why they wrote the Constitution, to just limit and hamstring government in every way possible, because they knew if you give man the power, he will abuse the power. And so, but we're going to talk about that today. And it's, again, something that even if you know this material, Richard Gage goes through it in such a articulate, scientific, precise way. It's really powerful to get to know this information and then share this with others. And then we'll do a second part in January with Richard Gage as well. But 3,600 architects and engineers have signed on with him. Once they saw his evidence, they said, we agree with you. That's what has happened. And there needs to be a new investigation done to show that to the world and America what has happened. And then those that are responsible, in my opinion, definitely George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld, they had to be in on it. And even if they just allowed other people to do it, like a murder or anything else, you're responsible for that when that happens. But they had said months beforehand, we need a modern-day Pearl Harbor to be able to get this Patriot Act that they'd already written. We need to get it through Congress. We need some major catastrophe on American soil. Well, it's not an accident. What happened, happened. But today is going to be specifically about Building 7. Even a lot of people that know, oh, the Twin Towers were taken down by demolitions and all that, they don't even know about the third building that came down on September 11th. Do you? Are you familiar with Building 7? It was the third building that came down that day. A lot of people don't know about it, but that we're going to focus on that one, because once you prove that one was a controlled demolition, which Richard Gage will do today beyond any shadow of any doubt, then it's much easier to step into the Twin Towers and realize, oh, that's obviously what happened there as well. And here's the scientific proof that shows that is true. So again, if this is new to you, be patient, learn. I've watched hundreds of documentaries on this over the last 20 years and learned as much as I could possibly learn. But when I came across Richard Gage and his materials, 20 years of scientific research from an engineering, architecture, and physics point of view, I realized, this answers all the questions that you're not sure about. How did this happen or how did that happen? Well, he answers those. I think it'll be a lot easier for many of you now to accept this. You know, before 2020 and the whole COVID nonsense, the response, the protocols, the shots, a lot of people just would not accept this. I have friends that said, no, that's impossible. Our government could not have done that. But some of them now are saying, now I believe it is true because of what happened with COVID, with the way they purposely killed and injured so many, and they withheld all the things that would help people and everything else. We know our government is incredibly evil, but this is still a hard thing to accept. But we have to understand that if we're ever to really purge the deep state, really hold our representatives accountable, there has to be some awakening to realize you cannot trust them for one inch, one second of time. They need to be watched. They need to be handcuffed in every way possible, because behind the scenes, behind our backs, with the bribes, the kickbacks, the payolas, they will always be abusing their power over us if they're allowed to. Anyway, carefully watch this presentation. I'm going to make some comments throughout it that I think are important. But again, this is information that is vital if we are ever to finally awaken the majority of Americans to the fact that our country isn't what it appears to be at the government level.
There are others who will be sharing this podcast who have not even heard an alternative theory like me, and that a third tower came down. Well, what does this mean if this is true? So I just want to prepare us, because this can turn our worldview around and can be very disturbing. And I just want to let people know that that happened to me and it was very painful. I got very scared. I got very angry when I found out this information. And it takes some getting adjusting to. I mean, like weeks or months or years even. This is not a pleasant awakening, but a powerful one. So I encourage people to share this information once you realize that it's true, that we do have a third tower that came down, for instance, Building 7, right? A 47-story skyscraper that most architects and engineers don't even know anything about it. Even though it was the third worst structural failure in modern history, should have been the most studied building failure ever. And yet we don't know about it. Part of the reason is because it happened on 9/11. But this was a 600-foot-tall building. It'd be the tallest building in most of our states. Standing next to the Twin Towers, it seems dwarfed. They were the tallest buildings in the world at the time they were built. Now, no plane hit this building, Building 7. And yet it went down at 5:20 in the afternoon. In the morning, it was damaged a little bit by the towers. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was tasked by Congress to explain these collapses to the American people, said that this was not a significant factor, this damage from when the North Tower went down in the building's collapse. Okay. Well, let's look at that collapse and see what happens here. The East penthouse in the upper left comes down first, 5:20 in the afternoon, and then the entire building does this. And so we have to ask ourselves, what could have caused that, right? Well, let's go to the official narrative offered by Shyam Sunder, the project leader.
What we found was that uncontrolled building fires caused an extraordinary event. The collapse of World Trade Center 7 was primarily due to fire.
Fires. Okay, well, then we have to look at those fires. Here are those fires. As you can see, they are few, they are small, and they are scattered throughout the building. More importantly, they are actually burned out. on the floor of interest by NIST to propagate their initiation of collapse theory. They think it all started right up here on the 12th floor near this column 79, where they claim that those fires were burning for an hour and a half prior to the collapse. But the video, the photos and the videos show that they were burnt out. So it couldn't have been those fires, which were, according to them and their theory, expanding steel beams, pushing a girder off of its seat on column 79 and causing a progressive collapse inside the building. We'll get into that. But fires have never brought down a steel frame, fire-protected structure in history ever. A type 1 fire-resistive construction is an incinerator. It's designed to allow the contents to burn in case the sprinklers, if they're there, don't put it out. So here we have not lost a building due to office fires, not before and not after 9/11, and these fully engulfed skyscrapers, right? We've not lost one. So then we have to ask ourselves, what could this destruction be?
Do you see those fires in the pictures right now that he was just talking about? Those are buildings, some of them burned for weeks with unbelievably raging fires, and they didn't come down because the buildings are designed not to come down. They're designed not to come down when a plane hits them. That's one of the things they, even before September 11th, they built them to endure a plane strike. So it's important to see that. So then you're not, you know, a sucker for the narrative, oh, the fires took them down. If you don't know about temperatures, you don't know about steel, construction, different things, you're like, oh, okay. That's why I always thought, oh, I guess the fires just made the building collapse. Not knowing, no, that's not possible for that to happen. Steel frame buildings have never come down from fire. And that's a key to remember. Here's the next clip.
Well, what does it look like? Does it look like a controlled demolition, which we see on the left, several different versions? And on the right, we see Building 7. Is there any similarity? Is there enough similarity to warrant an investigation into the possible use of explosives, especially since it looks exactly like a controlled demolition, especially since fire, the official cause of this building's collapse, has never in history brought down a steel frame fire-protected structure. So we have to ask ourselves, what are the features of controlled demolition? Well, there are many. David Ray Griffin identified 10 of them. We're going to compare those features to Building 7, beginning with feature 1. Is there a sudden onset of destruction at the base of the building? Well, here's Dan Rather narrating his view of this collapse on 9/11.
And what you're seeing are high shots. Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
What was that, Dan? Deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down? Well, here's Dan using his intuition. We all should be using our own frame of reference. We've seen the old hotels, for instance, in Las Vegas, right? So, but the problem is he's never discussed this after 9/11. In fact, with two exceptions, we've not seen this building come down or be shown on mainstream television. It's as if it's been swept under the rug. Again, it should have been the most studied structural failure ever because what? No plane hit this building. And fires have never brought down a skyscraper. We have hundreds of similarly designed skyscrapers throughout this country alone. Well, feature number two, is there a straight down symmetrical collapse? Let's look from West Street. Pretty straight down, pretty symmetrical. How do you do that? How does that happen? You have to take out all the core columns at once within a fraction of a second of each other, followed about a second later by the perimeter columns. That pulls in the core and pulls in the perimeter columns on top of the core. Well, the perimeter columns highlighted in yellow here. So can these fires accomplish that level of precision? I mean, this is like grade school stuff, but we have to show it anyway because it becomes so clear to us. If you don't do that in a precise order, you might get something like this, which is not good. You don't want that to happen, and you don't want this to happen. Have it stop halfway down because the explosives don't go off. Somebody has to go back into that building and fix it, right? If a building is damaged on one side, i.e. building 7 with column 79 being the first column to go in the northeast corner, you're going to have a damage pattern, a falling pattern that responds to that damage. So we didn't get that in building 7, as you saw in the video. What we are told is that these long span beams expanded, pushing this girder off of its seat on this column 79, and then floor 13 falls on 12 and 12 on 11 and so on for 9 floors. And then this column 79 buckles. And when it buckles, it causes the collapse all the way up to the top. But none of that could have happened. For one reason, that girder couldn't have slid sideways off of its seat. It's tied into the concrete slab with these bolts or shear studs. And the shop drawings show 30 of them on that girder that NIST has slid off of its seat. So also the building is fireproof, so it's not going to be heating up and expanding. NIST ignores that. They also ignore the steel stiffeners, key structural components that would have kept that girder from failing, the flange folding, and then, which is what NIST says, but they have to deny that that steel stiffener was even there. But you can see it even right here in behind this beam here on this girder. It supports the flange, so the girder would have had to have been slid all 12 inches off of its seat, not just halfway like NIST imagined. Also, if the girder did fall, it would take 10 times the amount of dynamic force to impact the floor below in order to break those girder connections. So we don't have that. So NIST goes out of their way to create a fancy computer model and tries to convince us.
Here's a structural model showing the building collapsing, which matches quite well with the video of the event.
So the fancy model shows 400 structural steel connections failing every second in order to facilitate. And they stop it after just 2 seconds into the global collapse, as you see on the right here. They've got the penthouse, right? It collapses in an isolated incident, a separate mini-controlled demolition, if you will. But their model, which they had 7 years to produce, because this report didn't come out until 7 years after 9/11. And they can't even get it to fall straight down like the video, even though they back engineered it to do exactly that. So we submitted a request for their computer input data, and they say, nope, that might jeopardize public safety if we were to give that to you. Then the terrorists could find out how to bring down high-rise buildings. That's just an excuse. You know what jeopardizes public safety? If you deny access to this critical information that architects and engineers are asking for and need in order to ensure the public safety. Because again, there's hundreds of similarly designed buildings. We have to ask ourselves feature number 4, how fast did this building come down? Well, physicists have clocked it. It comes down at free fall acceleration.
The NIST committee was just like the Warren Commission with the JFK assassination. Their only purpose is to cover up what really happened and push out the narrative that the government's pushing out as that's what really happened. Well, just like we know now, our government killed JFK. I'm telling you crystal clear, our government took down the buildings on September 11th. A lot of the times when you're trying to figure things out, all you need to see is one piece of the puzzle. You might not know the whole picture with that, but you know what I've been told is not true because this proves it. And the narrative is a lie. When things fall at free fall speed, that's one of the clues, clearly the piece of the puzzle. Oh, then they didn't collapse by fire or whatever. Because something falling at free fall speed is literally when, if I was at the top of a building and had a bowling ball and I drop it out the window of the Twin Towers, and at the same time, it's right when the buildings start to collapse, both the bowling ball and the building hit the ground at the same time. Well, that's not possible for many reasons, obviously. The ball has just air beneath it. The building has a reinforced steel structure where the actual beams go down like a pyramid. They get wider and stronger and wider and stronger the further down. Why? Because at the very top of the building, the steel beams coming up there, how much weight do they need to support? Just the top floor, and that's it. And what about if you go five floors down? What do the beams need to hold up? Five floors worth of weight. And if you slowly work your way down 100 floors, those beams have to hold up 100 stories of weight. So buildings get stronger as they go down, so they're less likely to collapse down ever unless it's been a controlled demolition, because the top doesn't have enough force to break the bottom because it's so reinforced and so much stronger and heavier than the top floors are. But anyway, watch this clip.
Well, wait a minute. Free fall acceleration? What does that mean? That's as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky. Through what? Through 30,000 tons of structural steel above the 12th floor? What's happening? And below the 12th floor, 10,000 tons of this steel. It's incredible. This building is an amazingly strong building. So NIST was publicly embarrassed in a technical conference into admitting, after having denied for years, that it came down at free fall. Now, yeah, it came down at free fall. What does that mean? That means all of those interior columns not one of them gave any resistance for that period of free fall. Not one of them. So did these fires take out all those columns at once? You begin to see how crazy this is. Well, what happened to those columns? Let's look at them. We had a 47-story moment-resisting steel frame structure that's collapsed all in one pile to about a 4-6-story pile. All severed. Falls like a house of cards. Hey, buildings that collapse due to natural causes, like in this case, earthquakes, columns and beams are not severed one from another. The concrete is not pulverized to a fine powder. And yet that's what these fires are alleged to have done. So we got to ask, how could that have happened? Were there witnesses that heard sounds of explosions, saw flashes of light? Well, let's listen to a few of them. NIST says, no, there's no witnesses of such explosions. Let's listen to Daryl, a medical student.
We were watching the building, actually, because it was on fire. The bottom floors of the building were on fire. And, we heard this sound that sounded like a clap of thunder. Turned around, we were shocked to see that the building was... it looked like there was a shock wave ripping through the building, and the windows all busted out, and it was horrifying. And then, about a second later, the bottom floor caves out, and the building followed after that, and we saw the building crash down all the way to the ground.
Well, this is very helpful information. So is Kevin McFadden, former Air Force medic, who was there that evening.
You heard explosions like boom. It has like a distinct sound. It's not like when in compression, like boom, 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 like floors that were dropping and collapsing. This was boom, and like you felt a rumble in the ground, like almost like you wanted to grab onto something. That, to me, I knew that was an explosion. There was no doubt in my mind.
And this gentleman who saw a flash of light.
I was standing like two blocks away, and all of a sudden I just seen a big flash, and then I seen the building coming down, and I just seen people just running everywhere, chaotic-like.
And this first responder, Captain Richard Patterson of the New York Fire Department.
One set and let go as well, and was a series of concussive explosions.
And this first responder, Patrick Dillon.
I remember feeling that. Like it was like freight trains underneath the earth, shaking the earth, even shaking me. That's when we all saw Building 7 crumple in the middle, like way up at the top. It buckled and then dropped.
And this gentleman who was before that in the building, inspecting it, having all kinds of problems in there, including this.
Then he had to go into that building to assess it.
You could hear the building creak above us. You could hear things fall. You could hear the fire burning. You could see columns just hanging from the upper floors, gaping holes in the floors up above us. There was an elevator car that was blown out of its shaft and it was down the hall.
Columns hanging from the floors after an explosion which blew the elevator cab out of its hoistway down the hall. Think of the explosion that must have done that. Hey, this is not a result of the damage from the towers next door, because this is before the towers were down, and more importantly, the elevator hoistways are on the interior of the building. So the little bit of damage that NIST documents could not and did not make its way all the way into the center of Building 7, or it would have tipped over due to such damage. So we know that can't be the case. So the elevator hoistways are in the very center of the building. The cabs are inside these elevator hoistways, and the explosions were therefore in the core of the building. So we have Barry Jennings, the deputy assistant in the housing department, going into a meeting. He was called to, because the planes had hit the towers, the emergency meeting, went into Building 7, not realizing that they had actually evacuated Building 7 after the planes hit the towers. So he and Mayor Giuliani's attorney, Michael Hess, experienced this inside the building before the building came down. He's very clear about that.
When we got to the 8th floor, I started walking to one side of the building. That side of the building was gone. The first explosion I heard when I was on the stairwell landing, when we made it down to the 6th floor. Then we made it back to the 8th floor, I heard some more explosions.
You know, also the sound?
Like a boom. Like an explosion.
More than one?
Yes.
We started walking down the stairs. We made it to the 8th floor. Big explosion. Blew us back into the 8th floor.
When we get outside, a police officer comes to me and says, you have to run. We have more information of bombs, so you have to run.
So now there's information of bombs in the building, more information of bombs. And bombs like this heard in the late afternoon of 9/11 in the vicinity of Building 7. After the towers came down.
Yeah, here's one of the guys. He can tell you I'm okay, all right? Here, hold on. You want to call your mother or something?
NIST says there's no witnesses of bombs. Well, here's a video witness of a bomb going off in that area. So if this was a controlled demolition, people would know about it in advance. So we have to ask, is there any foreknowledge of destruction? When there's a controlled demolition, people know about it. What about Chief Nick Visconti, who says, we're moving the command post over this way. That building's coming down. Well, wait, he says the building is going to come down. Well, listen to Chief Hayden.
Well, we had our special operations people set up surveying instruments to monitor and see if there was any movement of the building. We're concerned of the possibility of collapse of the building. And we had a discussion with one particular engineer there, and we asked him if we allowed it to burn, could we anticipate a collapse, and if so, how soon? And it turned out that he was pretty much right on the money, that he said in his current state you have about 5 hours.
Wait a minute. In its current state, you have about 5 hours. So not only is it going to come down, we know exactly when it's going to come down. Even though fire, the official cause of this building's collapse, has never in history brought down a steel frame fire protected structure, he knows it's going to come down in 5 hours. Of course, this prediction could only have been made with foreknowledge. So how about these mysterious construction workers walking away from Building 7, hearing an explosion over the shoulder, looking back at the building, and then looking straight into the CNN camera and saying this.
Oh, boy. Did you hear that?
Keep your eye on that building. It'll be coming down.
The building is about to blow up. Move it back.
All right, guys.
We are looking back. There's a building about to blow up. Flame, debris coming down.
What? So not only is the building going to come down, now it's going to blow up. What's really going on here? And how about these witnesses that we looked at earlier, but had something else very important to share about Building 7?
All right. And he pointed to what turned out to be the entrance to Building 7's lobby. He said, go in there, take a break. There's other guys in there like that. And that's what I did. I finished coming down off the pile and climbed over the wreckage of Vesey and went into those revolving doors and just kind of fell on the floor. There were other guys in there doing the same thing I was, just shaking their heads and spitting out poison and trying to get their lungs back together again, as I was. And I was on the floor. These battalion chiefs come in through the revolving doors. There was three of them. They had the white helmets. I didn't get any IDs off them. But as soon as they stepped inside, what stepped in behind them were these two people in black with black ski masks on and Uzis, and the Uzis were, you know, hanging off their necks. And I don't know what they were or who they were, but the battalion chiefs started yelling at us, right? Ordering us to get out of this building. They're going to pull the building, everybody out now. And they ordered us back out.
Wow. They're going to pull the building, get out. So now there's some volition here about this as well. How about Captain Richard Patterson?
So he and I made our way over to the entrance of the building. Before we arrived there, there was a construction worker who happened to be, he emerged from the dust cloud and walked past the chief and I. And he said he had overheard the chief's comment, and he paused and said, "That'll be coming down around 5 o'clock.
Oh, now we have the time.
We arrive at 7, and there were two paramilitarily clad men with black rifles, sunglasses. And as we approached the entrance, they closed ranks and said, one of them said, "This building has been secured." Which is odd, because in my experience in the FDNY, anybody preventing access to the fire department in the event of a fire, that's a criminal act. The chief and I were not in a position to argue the point, given the inequality in weaponry present.
So, two independent corroborations of foreknowledge here, but also these individuals in paramilitary. What's that all about? Keeping the firefighters from going into a burning building and assessing the fires. So this really begins to add up to something else, especially when you listen to the witness of Kevin McPadden, who we heard about explosions. But before that, he said something else. They're held back about six blocks away from Building 7 because they're told it's going to come down. It had structural damage. And that's why it's going to come down at 5 o'clock, apparently. But here's what he experiences before that. He's listening to a radio held in the hand of a Red Cross worker, and he hears this.
At the last few seconds, he took his hand off, and he heard 3, 2, 1.
What? Do fires bring buildings down to countdowns? So what's really going on here? We can get a clue if we listen to the BBC announce the collapse of this building 20 minutes before it happened.
Now, more on the latest building collapse in New York. You might have heard a few moments ago, I was talking about the Salomon Brothers building collapsing. And indeed it has. Apparently that's only a few hundred yards away from where the World Trade Center towers were. And it seems that this was not a result of a new attack. It was because the building had been weakened during this morning's attacks. We'll probably find out more now about that from our correspondent, Jane Stanley. Jane, what more can you tell us about the Salomon Brothers building and its collapse?
Well, only really what you already know. Details are very, very sketchy.
Sketchy indeed. They apologize for this grievous error, citing the confusing events of the day. What, does this make them psychic? They can now predict. It's pretty embarrassing, actually, but not to be outdone. CNN announces at 11:07 the collapse of a 50-story building 20 minutes earlier than that.
In New York, Alan Dodd Frank joins us on the phone in Lower Manhattan. Alan?
Alan, just 2 or 3 minutes ago, there was yet another collapse or explosion. I'm now out of sight. A good Samaritan has taken me in on Duane Street. But at 10:45, there was another collapse or explosion following the 10:30 collapse of the second tower. And a firefighter who rushed by us estimated that 50 stories went down. The street filled with smoke. It was like a forest fire roaring down a canyon. Now, as I think Patty Sabgen and others have told you, all of Manhattan is covered, downtown Manhattan is covered with thick white ash and building material.
50 stories went down? No. No other 50-story building went down. No other building went down altogether at all. So he's referring here to Building 7 and can only be so. Had it come down at that time, which was immediately after the towers came down, we wouldn't have any videos of it because it would have been completely obscured, this event, by the massive dust cloud released when the Twin Towers came down. So maybe it was supposed to come down at that time. And those mysterious construction workers going back into or coming out of Building 7 and hearing explosions and talking about it on the CNN camera, maybe they were there to fix a dud that was supposed to have gone off at that time.
I think that's a key point right there that he talked about. I believe that is true. They know what they're doing. They're experts in deceit and espionage and subversion. And pulling things off like September 11th, which has been done many times. We've had so many black flag events and black swan events and things. But if the demolition would have gone down in the morning, like it was probably supposed to, in the midst of the clouds of dust from the Twin Towers, we would never would have known what happened to Building 7. We'd just say, oh, it must have been taken down by the planes too. It would just been rubble there. But the fact that men had to slip in there later and correct whatever happened, and people saw that, and the smoke had cleared enough, and the dust from the concrete being vaporized with the explosives, where then they could see it, and they could hear the explosions, and people were there and said, no, this is what happened. But the plans of the wicked, the Bible says, be sure your sins will find you out. Well, these things are finally coming out. And I think when this gets to President Trump and he understands his city, New York, that he loves with all his properties there and stuff, what was purposely destroyed by the deep state, I think he will open up a new investigation for the world to see.
Well, interestingly, the building's owner came out a year later and said this on PBS regarding the collapse of Building 7.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
Wait a minute. They made the decision to pull. Firefighters don't pull buildings. Pull it is a term used in the controlled demolition industry, not the fire industry, and it's used to bring down a building by controlled demolition. And the firefighters weren't even allowed, as you already saw, at gunpoint, into the building to fight it. FEMA and NIST both acknowledged that they made the decision early on not to attempt to fight the fire. For various reasons, in this case, in they say because of damage to the Building 7 from the North Tower, they were kept out of the building. No firefighting in World Trade Center 7, says Dr. Shyam Sunder of NIST. Why? He has another reason.
And had a water supply for the automatic sprinkler system been available, and had the sprinkler system operated as designed, it is likely that fires in WTC 7 would have been controlled and the collapse prevented.
So the collapse would have been prevented if only water supply was available. Well, where does the water come from to get to the World Trade Center? It comes from the north. All 20-inch mains coming from the north to the south, converging pretty much at Building 7, before it gets to the World Trade Center towers. But they said, oh, when the towers came down, that damaged the mains, so there was no pressure for Building 7. Well, that's ludicrous when you look at this drawing itself. And even Chief Pete Hayden acknowledges that, yes, there was water available to fight the fires in Building 7. And there's backup pumps in Building 7 to provide water. And the water pressure shown by these fat hoses shows that there is water pressure from the fire hydrants that the pumps are using to pump, in this case, put out these car fires mysteriously around the World Trade Center. So they can easily add pressure if there was no pressure inside the building via these Siamese connections, fire department connections on the building. And the sprinklers are shown as working in the building in this video, which shows them working so that they did have pressure in the lower half of the building. So interesting. The lies have been shown and proven, this lies. And in fact, this controlled demolition expert has this to say.
Danny Jowenko is the expert on this in Europe. What did he say?
Dit is controlled demolition. Zeker weten. Zeker weten. Er is nagesprongen. Dit is in opdracht gebeurd. Dit heeft een team gedaan van experts.
Very helpful information from one of the top European controlled demolition experts. And about 36 structural engineers signed on to the petition demanding a new investigation. To add to the 3,600 architects and engineers demanding such is Kamal Obaid. A localized failure in a steel frame building like World Trade Center 7 cannot cause a catastrophic collapse like a house of cards without a simultaneous and patterned loss of several of its columns at key locations within the building. Well, he's backed up by the University of Alaska, who spent 4 years $300,000 performing a finite element analysis, proving that NIST is wrong, that this building could not have collapsed by fire. In fact, they said if that did happen, it would have tipped over. Well, how do they get the building to collapse finally in their model on the left so that it appears so that it reproduces the original collapse as seen in the video in the middle? They take out all the core columns and followed by the perimeter columns. Whereas NIST's finite element analysis on the right, they have to stop it after 2 seconds because it begins to tip over. They can't even back engineer their own computer model to mimic the behavior of the actual building collapse. So NIST finds that fire did not cause the collapse of Building 7. The temperatures were not high enough to cause the weakening of the steel framing. Thermal expansion did not result in a loss of support for the beams and girders, as claimed by NIST. The collapse of Building 7 was a global failure involving what? The near simultaneous failure of all the columns in the building. It's not a progressive collapse, as claimed by NIST. So that's very clear, and this came out, 135-page report that you can find on our website, richardgage911.org. But we got to ask ourselves, if fire didn't cause this collapse, what did? Is there any evidence? Well, yeah. In fact, it's provided to us by FEMA in their May of 2002 Building Performance Assessment Team report, a metallurgical examination that appears in Appendix C. What happened to the steel at World Trade Center 7? Never before observed eutectic reactions causing intergranular melting, capable of turning a solid steel girder into Swiss cheese. Now, office fires don't do this to steel. Office fires get to be maybe 500 degrees Fahrenheit, maybe 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. But this is caused by the melting of steel, which starts at 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Rapid oxidation, sulfidation, liquid iron. Guess what? That's molten iron. Again, that's 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Sulfur formed during this hot corrosion attack on the steel. This is all very well documented by FEMA originally. And the New York Times says this is perhaps the deepest mystery uncovered in the investigation. But it's completely omitted from the NIST report when they took over the investigation in 2002, producing their own report in 2008. No mention of those explosions, no mention of hot corrosion attack on the steel, no inclusion of the report that documents all of this melting of steel. Steel members in the debris pile appear to have been partly evaporated in extraordinarily high temperatures, says fire protection engineer Jonathan Barnett, the author of the FEMA report. But it takes 4,000 degrees to evaporate steel. We don't have a quarter of those temperatures available in this building. Not even jet fuel gets that hot. Jet fuel burns only at 600 degrees Fahrenheit, according to its manufacturer. And the evaporation of steel is exactly what structural engineer Abulhazen Astani Azal finds. He had a National Science Foundation grant to study the steel. And we know when we see liquid molten steel or iron pouring out of the material held in the crab claw excavator, by its color, we get a strong indication of its temperature. We're exceeding 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit here. Again, jet fuel burns only at 600 degrees Fahrenheit, and no plane hit this building. But this evidence applies equally to the Twin Towers, where they saw pools of molten iron down in, as they descended in the gaps in the pile down into the basements, looking for people. So what could produce 4,000 degree temperatures? Could thermite do that? Well, what is thermite anyway?
An incendiary used by the military, thermite is a compound of iron oxide and aluminum, which when ignited sustains an extreme heat reaction, creating molten iron. In just 2 seconds, thermite can reach temperatures over 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit, quite enough to liquefy steel. We know that open-air fires cannot burn hot enough to melt steel, but metal had melted at the base of the towers. Appendix C of the FEMA report describes sulfur residues on the World Trade Center steel. The New York Times called this the deepest mystery of all. Sulfur slightly lowers the melting point of iron, and iron oxide and iron sulfide had formed on the surface of the structural steel. Sulfur used with thermite is called thermate, producing even faster results.
Well, maybe we're getting somewhere. Because if thermite were used, it would explain the molten iron at 4,000 degrees. Molten iron is the byproduct of thermite. It would explain the sulfur, hot sulfur corrosion attack on the steel that FEMA mentioned. Sulfur is added to thermite to become thermate, much more effective at cutting through steel. It would also explain the abundant molten iron microspheres that we're about to look at, because we have evidence of ignited incendiaries in the World Trade Center dust provided by the U.S. Geological Survey in their abundant studies of the World Trade Center dust produced in 2005 in their Particle Atlas of the World Trade Center dust. Billions of previously molten iron microspheres, about the diameter of a human hair. In fact, they're so abundant that the EPA says these are used as a signature component to distinguish World Trade Center dust from common office building dust. It's not even World Trade Center dust unless it has these molten iron microspheres, previously molten. Well, what does this imply? I mean, given the quantity of these, up to 6% of some of these samples, we have a total by extrapolation up to 4 tons of these particles. They don't even know where they came from. RJ Lee says, well, they're formed during the event. A separate environmental consulting firm, RJ Lee Group, doing studies on the dust. Not before, by the iron workers or welders putting the building together. Not afterward, by the iron workers taking the building down, but during the event. Well, where do they come from? Let's do an experiment. Experiment is the arbiter of competing hypotheses. Let's do one. Thermite. Let's light some. What do we have? Very hot. Looks like thousands of sparks, but they cool, they fall into the pan as molten iron microspheres. Why are they spherical? Well, that's just what liquid does under pressure, like aerosolized liquid. Surface tension forms itself into spheres. Well, that happened with much hotter temperatures in other metals, like molybdenum, which is a metal that melts at 4,700 degrees Fahrenheit. And yet there it is, melted. So the USGS documents this and is showing these extreme hot temperatures, but they can't explain. Don't even try. But they show evaporated lead, RJ Lee Group does. 3,200 degrees lead evaporates at. The presence of lead oxide on the surface of the mineral wool indicates the existence of extremely high temperatures during the collapse, which caused metallic lead to volatilize, oxidize, and finally condense on the surface of the mineral wool. Well, this is pretty incredible. It takes temperatures 4 to 6 times hotter than office fires or even jet fuel can get to evaporate lead and iron. Molten iron droplets falling on the tops of these cars surrounding the World Trade Center. There's no other explanation for these toasting of the tops of these cars around the World Trade Center in the official narrative. Nothing. We have to ask ourselves, okay, that was and could only be evidence of ignited thermite. Is there any evidence of unignited thermite in the World Trade Center dust? Well, yeah, a team of 8 international scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen study 7 independently collected samples, and they find in all of them these curious red-gray chips. They thought they were paint at first, but they're attracted by a magnet, and along with a molten iron microspheres, which they also found. And these chips have a curious component. When they do X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy, they find aluminum in the chips. They find iron oxide, the two ingredients of thermite, aluminum and iron oxide powder. Well, they get real curious, zoom in 50,000 times with an electron microscope and find nano-sized particles of iron oxide and aluminum powders, iron oxide crystals, aluminum platelets, 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. It's set in a matrix of organic material, oxygen, silica, carbon. Organic material is what they add to TNT to rapidly expand and knock things over, which is how explosives work. Incendiaries like thermite work by means of massive heat, 4 to 5,000 degrees. Well, in this case, they call it super thermite. It was developed at Lawrence Livermore Lab, 2001. Explosive composites based on thermite reactions. So it was developed prior to 9/11 and published in 2001. And interestingly, they've taken an incendiary, thermite, and engineered it to become more explosive. Because when these particles of iron oxide and aluminum powder are so small, the surface volume increases exponentially. In fact, at Lawrence Livermore, when they put these in a heater, a differential scanning calorimeter, and measure the resultant energy, they prove that it's thermitic material. And that's exactly what all four samples that they finally documented carefully did. They ignite. Well, that proves that it's a thermitic material and not a paint. So we have something very interesting that they produce when they ignite. What's that? They produce molten iron microspheres with the same chemical reaction as the molten iron microspheres found in the World Trade Center dust and documented by R.J. Lee and the U.S. Geological Survey. So we know exactly where those molten iron microspheres came from. They came from these red-gray chips. As if we didn't know, they're found attached to partially ignited red-gray chips, as you see here and here. So, you see, this stuff is not made in a cave in Afghanistan. It's made only in the most advanced defense contracting laboratories. And so a real investigation needs to be done, and it can be done because all of this is documented in a peer-reviewed 24-page paper in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal, which concludes what? The red layer is active, unreacted thermitic material incorporating nanotechnology. It's a highly energetic pyrotechnic or explosive material. And so we have all the key characteristic features of controlled demolition. And they are very clear. It's a very uncharacteristic features as well with the incendiaries. It's direct evidence of the use of incendiaries. Fire doesn't create any one of these features, let alone all 10 of them. With additional circumstantial and corroborative evidence and testimony, this is a proof of controlled demolition with the use of incendiaries, a body of proof that's convinced 3,600 architects and engineers to demand a new investigation.
That, of course, there is scientific proof, all the things he talked about, that the narrative is a lie. I want you to have this ammo because it is the key to awakening the rest of the people that are still asleep. Here's a quick preview, just a minute or so, of next time we have his presentation on what he's going to be talking about with the Twin Towers.
When we have time, and maybe we do today, I don't know, we will jump into the Twin Towers, and we've got to look at them, because if Building 7 was a controlled demolition and it happened on 9/11, it's part of the conspiracy. No matter how one defines that conspiracy, it is integrally involved in the conspiracy of 9/11. We have to look at the Twin Towers, which are shown here, collapsing at the same time, so that we can see how identical these are, even though we have asymmetrical damage from the planes and the resulting fires in these buildings. How do we have upward, outward, arching streamers, a geometry of fireworks, freely flying structural steel sections weighing 4 and 8 tons, ejected laterally at 80 miles an hour, landing 600 feet in every direction? Gravity works down. We're seeing something very different here. They're trailed by thick white smoke clouds, which are not the result of the beams being on fire. Steel is not flammable in office fire conditions. So why are they trailing thick white smoke clouds? This is the aluminum oxide ash, the other byproduct of thermite, which we didn't mention yet.
Next week will be our Christmas episode, and we'll try to have one that really encourages you to be grateful for Christmas, for the birth of Christ, for his life, and I hope that'll be a blessing to you. Anyone that would still like to order any resources, please do it in the next few days so we can get it to you before Christmas. Our verse for this week is Jeremiah 17:9, which is, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" God told us in the Bible long ago, man can be so wicked if he's not been regenerated, if he doesn't fear God and keep his commandments. That's what we've been talking about this week, and I hope you'll share this with many because they need to understand the truth behind what really happened. But I appreciate you, and until next week, God bless you.